The Agriculture and Natural Resource Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Members, please note, oh, no one is excused. Will the Administrative Assistant Adrian please call the roll?
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Bouchada Cabrera?
Here.
Representative Botano?
Here.
Brennan? Buchanan?
Here.
Chambliss? Clemens?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
McClure? Morales?
Present.
Umfroy? Roth?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tant?
Here.
Have a quorum, ma'am.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or are on silent. If members of the public are wishing to address the subcommittee, will you please fill out an appearance form, and Adrian will give it to me, and we will know your interest in addressing the subcommittee. Members, we have two items on the agenda today. First, we have a presentation by the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget by Kim Kramer, Environmental Policy Coordinator and Secretary Sean Hamilton, Department of Environmental Protection on the Governor's recommended budget for fiscal year 2022-2023. Then we will take up our consent agenda. Okay, let's move on to our presentation on the Governor's recommended budget. Members, please hold all questions until Ms. Kramer and Secretary Hamilton have finished their presentation. Ms. Kramer, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Tomko, and members of the committee. I appreciate. My name is Kim Kramer, and I'm the Environmental Policy Coordinator for Governor Ron DeSantis. It is my privilege today to present the environmental portion of the Governor's Freedom First budget. Joining me today, as Chair Tomko said, is Secretary Sean Hamilton. He will be talking about some of the Department of Environmental Protection's major initiatives that are included in the Governor's recommendation. I want to thank my staff as well as agency staff for all the hard work that went into putting together these recommendations. We look forward to working with you and your committee in developing this year's budget. The agencies contained in this recommendation include the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Department of Citrus, Department of Environmental Protection, and Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. These pie charts represent an overall picture of the Freedom First budget broken down by policy area. The total budget, which was $99.7 billion, the first pie chart represents both general revenue and trust funds, of which $4.4 billion, or 4.5% of the recommended budget, is dedicated to environmental agencies. The second pie chart is specifically general revenue, of which over $225 million is for the environment. It should be noted that even though the governor has recommended a significant investment in the environment, the agencies within the environmental area are primarily funded through trust funds. Therefore, it makes up a small portion of the overall general revenue included in the governor's recommended budget. Governor DeSantis's Freedom First budget reinforces the governor's steadfast commitment to the environmental protection by recommending over $4.4 billion. These funds are largely split between the Department of Environmental Protection, which is the blue part of the pie, and that's about 50%, Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services with almost 40%, and in addition to the two larger departments, the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission receives about 10%, and the Department of Citrus about 1% of the overall recommended budget. The Governor's Freedom First budget recommends pay increases for state sworn law enforcement officers, state correction, detention, and probation officers, state firefighters, and state employees. These averages on this slide are based on methodology developed by the Office of Policy and Budget and the Department of Management Services, taking into account the $13 minimum wage compression implementation, requirements of the current year General Appropriations Act. As you can see, using this methodology, the governor's budget can support a 4% pay increase for most state employees. The governor recommends $17.8 million to increase the salary of over 1,100 DACs, DEP, and FWC sworn law enforcement officers. Under this proposal, entry-level sworn officers will receive a 20% increase. Non-entry-level sworn officers will receive a 25% increase. The governor also recommends $18.5 million to address compression in pay inequities for these four agencies. And this slide shows the amount each agency would receive under the governor's proposal. The governor recommends that each agency be given the discretion on implementing this pay proposal to best meet the needs of the agency. These are some of the additional pay issues that are addressed in the Freedom First budget. The governor recommends $1.3 million to ensure that all 512 DACs special risk firefighters receive at least a $2,500 pay increase, $120,000 in additional grant authority, and $100,000 to address criminal justice pay incentive shortfalls for the FWC law enforcement officers. I will now hand it over to Secretary Hamilton to discuss DEP's portion of the proposed budget. Following the Secretary's part, I will highlight a few other issues, and then we'll both take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Secretary Hamilton, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, committee members. As you heard, I'm Sean Hamilton, Secretary for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. As you know, DEP is the state's lead agency for the management stewardship of our air, water, and land resources, and I am happy to be here today in support of those efforts to present to you our portion of the FY22-23 Freedom First budget. Upon taking office, Governor DeSantis called for $2.5 billion to be invested over 4 years for the protection of water resources, an increase of $1 billion over the previous 4 years, and after only 3 years in office, we're close to reaching that goal by securing over $2 billion. The fiscal year 22-23 Freedom First budget continues this investment by dedicating more than $980 million for Everglades restoration and the protection of water resources. This level of investment would bring the four-year total to more than $3 billion. All right, a little bit more on the details. The $980 million included in the FY22-23 Freedom First budget will allow us to continue to expedite Everglades restoration through sound science and project collaboration, implement clean water projects addressing springs protection, improved infrastructure, and reduced nutrients in our waterways, utilize grant programs to assist communities with water supply and septic tank projects, advance alternative water supply projects to meet Florida's future water needs, and then combat blue-green algae and red tide that have harmful environmental and economic impacts on our communities. Specifically, the budget includes $660 million for Everglades restoration projects. This is just a little bit of a breakout here. $111.5 million for restoration strategies, $466 million for a comprehensive Everglades restoration plan, or SERP. This includes $128 million for the EAA reservoir, and $125 million for the Lake Okeechobee Watershed Restoration Project to reduce discharges to the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie estuaries, and then $83.3 million for the Northern Everglades Estuaries Protection Program. Additionally, $195 million targeted water quality improvements. This includes $125 million for the wastewater grant program, $50 million to accelerate projects to meet scientific nutrient reduction goals identified in TMDLs, and then an additional $20 million for critical infrastructure, including wastewater and stormwater projects that address water quality impairments and coral reef restoration in Biscayne Bay, $50 million to restore Florida's world-renowned springs, $40 million for alternative water supply grant program to help communities plan for and implement vital conservation, reuse, and other alternative water supply projects, $10.8 million water quality monitoring to support the blue-green algae task force, and then $15 million for innovative technologies to combat harmful algal blooms, which is a $5 million increase over the current year. And then $5 million to assist county governments with their response to red tide events. And lastly, $4.2 million in funding to FWC for continued support of red tide research activities. Within the Resilient Florida program, last year, Governor DeSantis championed the passage of the Resilient Florida Grant Program, which enhances our efforts to protect our communities from flooding and sea level rise. The Freedom First budget invests over $552 million for resiliency, specifically $52 million for resiliency planning and coral reef protection, and $500 million for the implementation of statewide resilience projects. For clean land and air investments, the Freedom First budget includes $137 million for the cleanup of contaminated sites. This funding will allow DEP to continue its progress in assessing and remediating contaminated sites and ensure our communities are safe from the impacts of historic releases and sources of pollution that can affect our land, water, and threaten public health. Specific investments include $125 million for petroleum tank cleanups, $7 million for dry cleaning solvent contaminated site cleanups, $4 million for hazardous waste contaminant site cleanups, and $1 million to assist homeowners with PFO and PFOS contaminants. The Freedom First budget also includes a $53 million for the implementation of the state mitigation plan for the $166 million Volkswagen Clean Air Act settlement. The plan addresses diesel emission reductions, including funds for electric vehicle infrastructure and electric buses. Florida prize properties. Because of the legislature's continued support, investment in land acquisition and management in Florida state parks, we are able to expand public access, enhance visitor experience, and increase tourism that is the economic driver for our state and improve the health of our environmental resources. The Freedom First budget includes $100 million for the Florida Forever program, the state's premier conservation, recreation, land, and acquisition program. $75 million will go to the Division of State Lands to acquire land with focus on protecting water resources for Floridians and visitors, but also invest in our wildlife corridors. $15 million for the Florida Communities Trust component of Florida Forever, which provides funding to local governments and eligible nonprofit environmental organizations for the acquisition of community-based parks, open space, and greenways that further outdoor recreation and natural resource protection. And then $10 million for the Florida Recreation Development Assistance Program, which provides competitive recreational grants to our local governments for the acquisition and development of land for public outdoor recreation. And then, of course, $52 million for state park infrastructure improvements and resource management, with the goal of maintaining the high standard of ensuring all visitors and residents alike have access to these prized properties for generations to come, which includes, of note, $6.7 million for the facility improvements at Rich Park, the state's premier destination for families and children with special needs. And then $50 million in beach nourishment funding to continue addressing Florida's critically eroded shorelines. Well, that concludes my portion of the presentation. I'll turn it back over to Kim, and we'll be available for questions afterwards. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Secretary Hamilton. Ms. Kramer, you can come back up. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Secretary. We will finish up with just a few more issues addressed in the Freedom First budget. The governor recommends $29.2 million for the citrus industry, which includes $15 million for the Department of Citrus and state fiscal recovery funds for the expansion of the e-commerce and digital marketing program. Governor also recommends $11.2 million for the control of non-native species, including $3 million to continue removing pythons from the Everglades. This is an increase of $2 million over current year. The governor recommends $3.8 million for the care and management of manatees. Specifically, investments include $2.9 million to enhance and expand the network of specialized acute care facilities to treat injured and distressed manatees. $718,000 and two full-time positions for the Manatee Rescue and Mortality Response Team, and $160,000 for manatee management, including aerial surveys and studies to document where these manatees are located and for continued research. thank you so much for the opportunity to present the governor's Freedom First budget, and the secretary and I will be happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kramer and Secretary Hamilton. Members, if you don't mind, I have a couple questions, and then we'll move on to some other questions. Going back to slide six, and I know we had discussed this before, but just so the committee can hear, how was inflation and its growing level considered in developing the governor's recommendation for pay adjustments? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. We have a team at OPB that started this summer looking at these pay issues, and I will be happy to set up a meeting that will go through all the methodology that came up that was used in order and coming up with these recommendations.
Okay, thank you. And it is my understanding, still on slide six, that many of the environmental agencies' trust fund revenues are just sufficient enough to cover the recurring expenditures. It appears that placing additional cost on them could cause them to be unstable. So just as we can build on what you had just discussed, if we could have shared to our committee what the analysis was done by your office to determine that the agency's trust funds could absorb those proposed pay increases.
Yes, Terry, we'll be happy to get back with you on that, but they did take into consideration the balances of the trust funds. And moving forward, we may have to look at other avenues, but they can support that initially. Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, members, it's y'all's turn. So, Rep. Chambliss, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not sure if it would be you or the secretary who would have answered this, but one of the things that I wanted to go back to was the funding for non-native species.
That would be me.
Awesome. my question was just, you know, for clarification purposes, does non-native species include different type of insect or wildlife that may be dangerous, say, to plants? That originate from another country. I'm asking because it made me think of different beetles, for example, that farmers sometimes in their crop encounter in the past that were like not native here, but came here one way or the other, and it created a big problem. And I'm just wondering. I know we mentioned pythons and the Python King. He's a pretty cool dude, but. I was wondering, is that included in non-native species? Are the funding, would that go to, for example, preventing those type of wildlife from you know, making the U.S. their home?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Chambliss, this bucket is just for non-native species such as pythons and lionfish is a big one. The actual infestation from insects would be covered under the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
Okay. Just wanted a clarification. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I had a question. I'm back on slide six. You mentioned a 25% increase for non-entry-level law enforcement. Will that include the higher people in the higher echelons, like 100,000 or so? Would it include those higher levels as well?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, that it would include that, but once again, it would be at the discretion of the agency for implementing them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Buzada Cabrera, do you have?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you had mentioned a pay increase for firefighters. Does that include only certain classes of firefighters and certain pay classes? And if so, why?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. It is for high risk, for special risk firefighters. And once again, this was a statewide OPB issue that was done, and we'd be happy to follow up with you and go through exactly the methodology that was done to come up with that.
I'll Representative Clemens, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, Ms. Kramer. I'm a visual learner. So when you, and sometimes numbers are not exciting, but when you put those pictures of our natural resources on to show, it really gives a visual image of for the public to where your tax dollars, where your budgetary dollars are going. So thank you for that. And for the Secretary, I really thank you for the visit with me in my office to help me understand some of the things that maybe we wouldn't ask online, but thank you for that familiarity. I have a series of questions, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
One is, you mentioned the non-native species, the pythons and maybe some plant life. Are manatees native species to Florida?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, they are.
Okay. All right, good. And then the first couple general questions, and then I'll get to some budgetary things. I was not really aware of the sworn officers in the Department of Citrus. Share with me what a sworn person with a badge and a gun does in the Department of Citrus, because I'm clueless to what duties they would perform.
Sure. You're recognized.
We don't have any sworn law enforcement in the Department of Citrus.
Okay, because I saw it up on the list. That was just for pay increases.
That was for the pay parity, the compression issue.
Okay, because yes. In the statement before you had talked about sworn officers, I'm like, I didn't know we had any.
The first line on that slide, which I can go back, I think.
Thank you for clarifying.
Okay.
I do notice in the budget, I think it may be slide 12, when we were talking about state parks, which I think we have some phenomenal state parks in Florida. What's the total... $43 million, I think, that the governor asked in his budget for the state parks. And is that enough to help repair the backlog? And if it's not, then what's the level of backlog and maybe a plan we have to kind of bring those operations and repair deferrals up to speed?
It's okay with you.
You're recognized. I can see Secretary Hamilton itching to get up there. So.
Oh, I didn't know I have to go all the way that high to get an answer.
No, it's thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for your question. Obviously, our state parks is, you know, near and dear to my heart, and hopefully all of yours. But for the maintenance, your question's dead on, right? There is an extensive backlog because you're never done. If you think about the extensive resources in our state parks, either on the land side and are the brick and mortar, you're never done. It is a repetitive investment that yields an exponential return, but as you think about the throughput, you think about the contracting, the engineering, the follow-up, the inspections, you have to have a responsive budget that we can adequately manage through a year, a given fiscal year. And this number starts to hit that sweet spot. And so the answer is no, this doesn't cover our backlog by any stretch of the imagination, but it keeps us progressing in a good spot.
You have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am. You know, the governor recommends some funding for one of my favorite state parks, although it's not in my district, the Billy Joe Rich Park on Cape San Blas.
Yes.
Is that amount that you requested sufficient to kind of, you know, fully reopen the park? And if it is, great. Congratulations. If it's not, what's the department's plan to getting it back up to full speed?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So right now, the park, there are a couple different things. There's actually some additional funding to continue to help with the Michael recovery and the repairs to that park. So we've got that. That's a good news. This 6.5 takes us even a step further to get us, oddly enough, to address a lot of the repairs, but also some of the ADA issues. And so, yeah, it gets us in a good spot. And so we should be ready to go. What you should see is a phase opening. We hope to very soon here. Get all of our day use open and within the matter of days, and then from that continue to build on opening the rest of the resources at the park.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. Representative McClure, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed in appropriations on Tuesday and I think again today that there's about $30 million being swept from the Inland Protection Trust Fund in the back of the book. Can you walk me through kind of your thought on that? This is a program that's been going on for about 30 years. Obviously, legacy petroleum contamination. We got to get this program kind of to mission accomplished. So walk me through, please, sir, why we're sweeping that fund in particular.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. And as a side note, I've already requested a sit down with your office to talk in more detail because, as you can appreciate and as most can, that is a, like you said, a long-standing program with a lot of intricacies. But as it relates to the sweep, I'll definitely let the governor's office weigh in as the sweep thought process. But as you know, the triggers associated with that tiered process of maintaining that tax base and that trust fund. I think the main question is, you know, from where we sit right now, what's that responsible bandwidth we can manage through the program and not get too forward-leaning from a resource perspective? Right now, we've got our scoring set at 15, as you know. Maybe as you know, but we also got some major projects that are also pulling at that scoring that we have to dedicate funding to. And so the question becomes, are we in a position right now where we continue to drop that range of score to continue to get further projects in the queue? And you're right, it is a budget balancing act. As far as this sweep, that again, it is to maintain that tax base. The question becomes, at what point in time, you know, can we fully take advantage of that 125 that we're asking for? Broader discussion about program optimizing. As you know, there are over 6,000, 7,000 sites remaining in this program. The question becomes, you know, how big of a throw, how reasonable can you throw at it to get that and expedite it to a sunset? And then I guess that is our broader discussion about programmatic function and how we might want to change in the future.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I look forward to sitting down with you to kind of drill into those program-specific issues.
Yes, sir.
It seems on those mega projects, and I'm going to speak kind of in generalities, but it seems like it's about half or it's a significant portion of the proposed budget. So if there was ever a year where, you know, you had one or two projects sucking up the majority of that revenue source, you know, in my experience, it shouldn't require a lot of, you know, manpower or resources to manage just two projects, right? They're kind of the size of the sites are kind of almost not critical to the resource being allocated from the department side, in my experience. So I would highly suggest, and I guess I'm asking, doesn't it seem to make sense that this would be the year that we would not want to sweep it to make sure that the balance of those sites are continuing on an assessment track into a remediation track? And that's kind of why I'm so passionate about this year. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and look forward to discussing it further. Offline.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I will. And just in short, you're right. There's an opportunity there to discuss now. Obviously, the spend plans for the mega sites came in late in the game as we were navigating our current budget allocation. But if there's an option, an opportunity, you know, to take whatever budget considerations we can midstream to keep the program going, you're right. It's not always a function of staffing level. It's a function of making sure we maintain an appropriate balance, because the one thing we don't want is ever put the program at risk of a stoppage because we've over-allocated and over-committed. And so that is a tight balancing act within that program, as you can appreciate. So look forward to sitting down, sir.
Representative Buchanan, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary, great to see you. I did have a question, and I was presenting another committee, so if this did come up, sorry to have it be reiterated, but I believe it's slide 9, as it relates to the back of the bill. $175 million was put in there to expedite Everglades restoration projects. What particular projects are being expedited, and has the district exhausted prior year's appropriations? And then just finally, you know, what's the impetus in doing that?
You're recognized.
Yes, sir. As far as district budgets, we definitely can follow up with you and provide you the detail of where they are in the budget process. Project-wise, I know one of the targets for that funding, what it could allow, if you think about the back of the bill and being able to turn the switch on that funding availability sooner rather than later, the district could definitely, as I understand it, would put it toward one of the EAA-associated SDAs. And why that's important, and again, one of those things where as you learn more, understanding that cost share requirement between the Corps and making sure we're in a position that we don't put that cost share and that balance book on the ledger at risk. And the notion is if we ever get to a point that the Corps gets in front of us, by federal law, they stop. And so part of it is making sure we do everything we can, the state is positioned to maintain that balance on that ledger. And so part of the thought process is incorporated in this funding as well.
Thank you.
Representative Stevenson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I love being in this committee. There's so many important things you're doing.
Love having you.
Thank you. Well, one of the things that I have noticed in Northeast Florida, my county in particular, is growing very quickly. There have been some important bulk acquisitions in the region, but the larger projects, we don't have a lot of large land holdings that are competitive in some of your programs, but we do have some landowners with smaller projects that have been holding on for a long time to try to get their projects in. They have water quality elements, but they're more of an FCT style. And I know that you're playing catch up in a lot of areas. Do you see the FCT having an opportunity for increased funding at some point in the horizon? I know that you mentioned $15 million today, because it comes out of that Florida Forever amount. And are you still getting applications for that, or are people still hoping to FCT will be an ongoing priority for the state?
You're recognized.
The answering of that last question, yes, there is interest in the FCT. You know, it is definitely a worthwhile function. And again, I love communities. I love small communities. I love that there is a program that's specific to them to provide that resource to those communities. Because again, if you think about a broader context, Florida Forever is also a very robust, large-scale acquisition conservation, principally type program. So having a program that communities can look for funding for that purpose is a thing. I think where there's an opportunity, though, is to continue or expand the outreach for the communities to take advantage of the funding and making sure it's the right project for the need. Because sometimes what you see is that maybe, you know, they're putting themselves or trying to compete in a category that it's not appropriate. But maybe if that project is curtailed more to a local need, more to a community recreational base and a commitment. You're right. If you take a small acre parcel and you throw it in a Florida Forever mix and you try to competitively rank against, you know, thousands of acres that are going to protect all of these different resources, that is a tough pull. But if you focus those projects and maybe even have local commitments, you've got a better chance of moving some of those local conservation and recognition needs forward.
I believe that we've had higher, more than $15 million in some earlier years.
Yes.
And we just don't have the opportunities, although they do have the good water quality thing. So I'll be sure and have them get with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Omfroy, you're recognized.
Thank you so very much, Chair. Good morning, Secretary. Thank you for being with us today. I have three questions. Can I please?
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much, Chair. So I'm sure you've heard, I would like to know why there's no urban funds for septic to sewer, because in my county, though we are the second most populous county in the entire state, we still have areas that need to be converted to septic to sewer. So I'm asking to see if it's possible for my great state to remember us in the septic to sewer connections, because we need some love too. So the next thing I have is in reference to our parks. I had an opportunity to tour one of my favorite parks, Hugh Taylor Birch State Park. I go there all the time. I take my nieces. I hang out there. But I actually got a chance to tour it correctly. There were pieces that I had no idea and was missing out on. Our state parks, we've done a really good job of funding them last year and doing a good job of funding them this year. But I feel like they've been ignored for a very long time in regards to us revamping them so that they, they see about between 28 million to 30, I know you know this, 30 million people. And I would love to see us really focus in on ensuring that, you know, the bathrooms, because people need to use the bathrooms when they come. And then also the infrastructure part, like at Hugh Birch in particular, the covert dams. We've got sinkholes now, and I know that we've received funding to fix that, but we have another one. And is there a way to I said this to them and they looked at me sideways because they were trying to not to be kind, but why haven't we raised the price of the admission to the parks? And if possible, being able to set aside 50 cents, 25 cents to that particular park's admission to go towards their smaller projects. To focus in on fixing those things. And I know I'm not the first person to suggest this. I heard that it's not a novel concept, but to know that five people can come in a car in the state of Florida and pay one fee is great, but it's not great for our state parks. And the other thing is, can we do a comprehensive look at what other state parks are doing to see if whether or not we need to upgrade how much we are charging compared to our fellow states? Because other people come to our great state and use our parks, and then we can't use our parks correctly. And I'm just saying. Thank you very much. The question is, can we please, is it possible to analyze the state of Florida's park system's cost of admission compared to our fellow states? And if we could figure out if we could raise the prices and then have focused projects for the particular park and the revenues they're generating into that particular park. I know that we try to be very holistic in looking at all the parks the same, but maybe just once we could focus in with the parks admission raising and taking a percentage of that raising and focusing in on that particular park. And those are my things. And I love our state parks and the amazing people that work there. And I thank you for this amazing budget towards them.
You're recognized.
Well, thank you. And I too share your passion for our state parks. I don't think, and again, I invite anybody on even any given day, if you need a reminder why we do what we do, go to one of our state parks, and it won't take you long to get that back in your soul. You hit on a lot of things that have, quite honestly, of interest to me, thinking about way to make sure our parks are sustainable, but also making sure we're supportive of the tourism and everything, and making sure we're being supportive of that balance there. And I think that is a discussion worth having. I really do. You, in light of the visitation and the reminder how important the role our parks play in just the health of any type of community, I think it is a discussion worth having, and I look forward to broadening that discussion. Obviously, the notion of a park being able to pull a percentage off, that is, you drew your point, that does have some sticky sides to it, just thinking about managing a system as a whole. So, but worth the discussion. Thank you, ma'am.
Representative Morales, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Secretary Sean, thank you for explaining about the budget. I wanted to ask if this particular facility that I just came in contact and toured a facility called the Bronson Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory. Are you familiar with that location?
No, ma'am. I'm sorry, Chair.
Yes, that's Dak's budget, so he would not be able to speak to that.
Thank you. I just wanted to bring it up to know if it would be related.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's my question.
Sure, if he could talk about it, he would love to. But, Representative Brennan, you're
I don't want my constituents watching, and it's probably not the proper forum, but Old Lusty Battlefield State Park, Florida's first state park, I was invited 2 years ago to a groundbreaking for a new museum visitor center, and nothing has happened since that day. The Park Service Director was there, the citizens, the Park Services, Citizen Support Organization was there, and I've made a couple of inquiries, but I'm just interested in getting that project going because it's been 2 years, and the only dirt that's been turned there is the dirt that we turned with our gold shovels that day. So if you could check on that for me. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Well, follow up, Representative Chambliss.
Again, just one more question, because these forums are so educational, especially when we're it's budget time, and as a freshman, you learn so much. So I had a historical question that if you couldn't answer now, I understand, but I just wanted to bring it up now. That's okay, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
With Everglades restoration funding, if we're looking over the last two decades, is that funding increasing, or is it staying the same? Because I'm just trying to, you know, get a historical perspective of how we come up with the numbers for Everglades restoration funding and seeing, are we, you know, is emphasis being put on, you know, increasing the amount of funding, or is it really stable based on current need, and then what's the justification for that? And so, again, if we didn't know that off the top of our head, that's fine, but I'd really be interested in getting that information.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And the answer to your question is short. Over the past recent years, specifically In this administration, the funding has increased. When you think about the rate, the investments, and the number of projects, and again, funding is important. Projects are also important, right? Getting those projects started, completed, and so both of those have, in my opinion, just looking at the history, like I said, it goes back years, but just looking at history, there is, and again, I hate to repeat this word because now it's starting to fly around a lot, there is a lot more momentum to get us to that finish line than recent years. And again, the state has been phenomenal in making sure and supporting increasing that funding, and we can get you a breakdown of what that looks like, but also doing every opportunity we can to get the federal government to match our momentum and match our investments. So, you know, again, we're not talking so much about restoration as we are maintaining and are enjoying the benefits from all of this investment. So, yes, sir, we'll get that to you.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you. I don't really have a question. I just have a comment. I had the great treat of meeting with our secretary here a couple of months ago. There wasn't a single issue you discussed that you didn't have a full understanding of the issues on. And I just wanted to say thank you for the expertise and for the investment that you've made in your profession to be a really good secretary. Just wanted to make that comment.
Well, Representative Tant, you definitely wrapped us up well. And Secretary Hamilton, I thank you for always being willing to answer questions and have discussions with us. And so we appreciate you and Ms. Kramer being here today for this presentation, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, ma'am. I'll take care.
All right, members, we are about to take up the consent agenda for appropriation project bills. We will take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. Members, we will not take up, question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in questions and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with Adrian before the vote. Members, in your packet, there is a list of all of the appropriation project bills. With that being said, are there any questions? Seeing none, I believe we have public testimony. Thank you, Adrian. We have Jordan Connors, City of Stewart, waving in support of 2039. Jeff Sharkey with Leon County, waving in support of 2401. Jeff Sharkey also waving in support with Leon County for 2403. Jordan Connors, City of South Bay, waving in support of 2551. Tom DeRita with City of Pahokee, waving in support of 2567. Thomas Hobbs with the City of Holmes Beach, waving in support of 2527. Thomas Hobbs with the Town of Longboat Key, waving in support of 2731. Martin Lyon with Lee Acres, waving in support of 4435. That looks like all of it. Members, do we have any debate? Seeing none, before I call the vote on the consent agenda, are there any nay forms? No. Remember, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for every bill on the consent agenda, with the exception of any no votes on the particular bills that were just announced. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bruchada Cabrera?
Yes.
Representative Botana?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Ranking Member Umfroy?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
14 favorable, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, all of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. This concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Ranking Member Umfroy?
I'd just like to say that I thought that consent bill was nice and long, but perfect. Thank you very much, Chair and team.
You're very welcome. Well, thank you all. And seeing none, Representative Roth moves that we rise. And without objection, the meeting is adjourned.